Oh gosh, I posted this on Threads once and they like came for me. They're like, don't you dare say that. When I hear people say like, how do you draw so well? How do you draw this? How do you do that? And people go, practice, practice. And I'm like, oh, stop it. Stop saying practice. We know practice. We're doing the practice. But what are the little things that make it so that you aren't just practicing and making your same mistakes over and over and over again?
You're listening to The Artist Business Plan, presented by The Super Fair. Illustrator Emily Barassa was in her late 30s when she started getting serious about her art. Her first big move? Enrolling in online classes.
Okay, you're too late to the game. But you're only going to get later, so just jump in.
Emily tells her story to Superfair co-founder James Milley after this message.
You know that feeling when your art finally looks complete? Perfectly framed and ready to hang? Well, that's exactly what Frame It Easy helps you do. They make custom framing super simple. Any size, tons of styles, and the widest selection of matte board colors that can even match directly from your artwork. Plus, you can preview it all in their 3D frame designer to make sure you've got the perfect fit. And if you're an artist selling your work, this part's huge. Frame It Easy can handle everything. Printing, framing, packaging, and shipping straight to your customers. Total done-for-you framing fulfillment, your branding included. So you can spend less time fulfilling and more time creating. Check them out at frameiteasy.com for the coolest custom framing you can find.
It's so funny that we have this podcast, and it is a podcast for artists to listen to. And often we have wonderful artist guests as yourself, Emily, here, but you don't get to see the art. So I want to start off by explaining what your art looks like. So you get to see in Emily's work everything from these everyday treats like Ritz crackers and chocolate chip cookies. You hone in on the texture so well. You capture it like it has this flaky salt on it that you really get to see. And then you also have kind of these summer objects that really feel nostalgic, I would say. Inflatable flamingos, summer cocktails. And these are all watercolors. The amount of texture and detail and richness that you have to them feels like you're stepping into this vintage photograph. And I encourage everyone to go check it out after listening to this episode.
Thank you. I love that. I do. I feel like I really, a vintage nostalgic sensibility is kind of like in every choice that I make, you know, like in my clothes or in my house or in my work. I mean, it's just kind of pervasive. Like I love those kind of details. And that is like my favorite part of the painting where I really find myself getting lost while I'm making is just, you know, getting every little detail that I think is interesting or that I'm noticing onto the page.
You know, you sound exactly to me just like you see the world through the lens of being an artist.
Yeah.
But we're here to talk today about how you have not always looked at yourself that way.
Yeah.
I want to take it back first. So. Yeah. Could you walk us through what was your very first memory of art, if you can recall?
So my mom is an artist. And so I grew up in a very artistic house. Like my brother and I would play gallery for fun. And I don't think that's really like a common thing that most, you know, toddlers do. But so my very first memory is probably of my mom teaching an art class in our backyard, you know, picnic table with the tablecloth, and we're cutting these rubber stamps and we're just doing like basic shapes. And I remember that my mom had prepared some perfect little circles for everyone to use as their stamp in case they didn't like how their circle turned out in the rubber. And I was just instantly like appalled, you know, like, how dare you? My circle is definitely good enough. And I'm going to use it even though it's wonky and crooked and whatever. And just feeling like, it's funny because like I've struggled so much with feeling like, am I good enough to do this? Am I an artist? Am I as good as my mom? Am I, you know, can I really make art in the way that I want to?
And so when would you say is the first time that you went from being interested in art to looking at yourself as an artist? You told yourself, no, this is part of me. This is part of my identity.
It was late. It's funny because like I can remember looking at the kids and the people that I knew that were artists and feeling like I was not that. So like all through my childhood, you know, my teenage years, college, like I would see people that I considered artists, you know, the stereotypical person that's like always sketching, like, you know, head down looking or whatever at their notebook and drawing all day long. And I was like, gosh, that's not me. I'm not like that. I guess I'm not an artist, you know? So yeah, when I was 18, I did undergrad at UCLA and I studied English. And I was really interested in fashion, and but I had no skills, and I was trying to take a drawing class, and UCLA was like, ma'am, sorry, no, you're not allowed to take this class because you're not an art major. And I was frustrated that I couldn't, you know, dabble in that there.
That's
and
impression.
Kind of well, it's like, well, how do I get the skills to get admitted to the program? Yeah. Like a chicken and an egg situation. But so I just kind of accepted, you know, that, okay, I'm just going to stick with my one degree in English. And then after that, I just, you know, needed a job, didn't want to be like, you know, broke and destitute and move home with mom and dad. And I went into advertising, which was fun and interesting, but you know, ultimately I think my problem with it was I felt like probably a lack of artistry or a lack of creativity in what I was doing. It's not like you get creative freedom, and I was on the sales side of things, and I just was like, this is not it. I can't do this forever. And
hey, this wasn't the dream. What?
What am I doing here? And then also feeling like, okay, motherhood is calling to me, and I can't imagine doing this job and having kids. So I went back to school again and got my teaching degree and went into teaching, and you know, worked with young kids. I taught kindergarten. I taught fifth, and I loved that. But, you know, I wasn't making enough money to like justify childcare when my kids were finally born. And the other thing too is that I felt like very energetically drained working with kids all day, and then being a mom at home, it's like the same kind of thing. So I went to being full-time mom at home, and then along the way, you know, decided to like pick up a few projects here and there. I was like really really into cooking. I helped design our house. Like I would sketch the cabinetry. I was like doing all of these creative endeavors and calling myself not an artist as I, you know, like quietly needle felted a banner for my daughter's birthday, or like, you know, got into chalk art, like what, anything but take an art class, you know?
Right.
And it was like, I just never even really considered it until I think I was, I mean, I want to say like my very late 30s, and just feeling like, gosh, I'm searching for something. And then I think it was when I started the Artist's Way book that I kind of went, oh my God, this is my struggle. It's because I'm an artist and I'm not letting myself be one because I feel like I suck at this. And so like, okay, maybe I should move towards the scary thing and like try to feel like I don't suck at it. And maybe then I'll start to feel more at peace with like, you know, my creativity and the things that I want to do and the things that I see in others that I want for myself.
And when did you read The Artist's Way? Because that sounds like that was a big moment for you.
Yeah, I think it was in 2020 that I read it. during COVID and just being like very internal, you know, our life got very quiet, as I'm sure, you know, well, maybe not everyone, but for me, like to have young kids at home and my husband suddenly working from home and we really were like just all here all the time, that kind of became my way to get my me time was journaling and like working through those pages. And it just, it was funny because like it clicked with me that, oh my gosh, this is what's going on. And I started like trying it out with neighbors and like, you know, the very limited interactions that I was having with people that weren't my husband and two kids. I would just say like, gosh, I think I'm going to become a professional artist. And, you know, and it was like, here's an insane idea that I have. And, you know, but just watch me, like, I'll do it. And they were probably like, okay, yeah, we're all, you know, I'm going to become a professional sourdough maker, whatever, right? We were all trying out all these things. And I was just having this moment of like, whoa, this feels really big and this feels really transformative. And I can just tell I'm not going to, this isn't going to be like a phase. Something feels different. Something just feels really right.
Yeah. I feel like 2020, 2021, yes, you had the sourdough makers who it was just, they were just trying to pass the time. But for me and my own art, early 2021, I started taking myself less seriously because I was really struggling before that to, I don't know, I felt like I wasn't making things that were big enough. Like there was this kind of momentous expectation that, oh, okay, like, you know, if it's not the best thing I've ever made, then why even bother? And so then I was like, okay, let me just start out by making something for myself.
Sometimes people in illustration are they want to talk about like concept and get really deep down like a conceptual path. And I'm like, I don't know. I just really want to paint this fish. Like, I don't know if there's a bigger concept. Like, I must paint this fish, you know?
I love that. And that's kind of what I'm getting at is you will discover along the way why it is that you are drawn to the things that you are.
Yeah.
And it might be, I mean, like you were saying at the beginning, that these details and the like texture, the nuances of things that people don't slow down to pay attention to. And you see that in your work.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that right there might be just that you think life is beautiful and worth painting. And that's enough reason.
It's like, it's not that serious, you know, right? Like we can make art just because it feels good for ourselves and, you know, why else do it?
I love that. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So we are at 2020, 2021 ish. And so here you are, you are like self-proclaimed, like an artist who started later in life, quote unquote, if you're listening, I'm quote doing quotation marks. and I guess kind of introduce us to how that went. Like, I guess, how did you dive into it?
I was learning online with whatever I could find available to me. Like watching YouTube videos and looking at my Instagram and going, oh, I'm going to paint like how this person does. I really like what they're making. I'm going to do like a copy of what they've done. And then, you know, ordering books off the internet and like working through the books and realizing somewhere in there that the people that I was learning from were creating art that was built out of something, some kind of previous training or some kind of, maybe they had a degree, maybe they didn't, but I kind of looked at it and I went, I think I'm trying to start in the middle. And they probably started at the beginning. Maybe it was when they were a child and they were just, you know, working through basic drawing lessons or whatever. And realizing like, I don't know how to do what they do because my entry point is different from theirs. And So I just started researching what are the classes that a person takes it in an art degree, and realizing like, oh gosh, it's the same everywhere. Like there's a path, and there's, I'm sure, you know, hundreds, thousands of years of thinking have gone into this path, and maybe I should consider the path. And I don't know what that looks like yet in my life, and kind of going, okay, you're too late to the game, but you're only going to get later. So just jump in, you know? And I signed up for RISD started putting their classes, their CE continuing education classes online. And I signed up for their drawing 1A. And it was like $400. And I was like, okay, is this worth $400? Like, you know, and it's like, it's so funny because, you know, you can never go wrong investing in yourself. But at the time, it just felt like, is this crazy what I'm doing? You know, and is it going to be worth it? And, you know, all of those things. And now I'm like, to everyone that I meet, that's like, gosh, I want to get better. I want to improve my art. And I'm just like, drawing 1A, like, that's where you live. Go do it immediately. What are you waiting for? And the minute I was in that class, you know, I was like very hard on myself, like judgy towards me, and like, you know, stressed about my deadlines. Like, you know, and it's like, it's fine. You're good. Just make something.
Like, oh my God, it's school all over again.
I cared so much, you know, and that's me, you know, but at the same time, I think I realized like, okay, everyone that I admire did this too. And I'm going to do it until there's nothing left, you know, there's no more classes left for me to take or whatever, or I feel like, okay, you ready, you know, go do it. But yeah.
What is it like gathering supplies, like having this physical class online? What is that like?
I feel like I've seen it in three different contexts. So I did it at RISD through their CE. And then while I was doing those classes, I also ended up taking online community college level classes to kind of like beef up my undergraduate credits. And so now it's GAD. Like I've seen it from a few different institutions. And so like mostly what I saw is pre-recorded videos from your professor that you watch on a weekly basis, like when you can. And so for me, it was always like at night, put the kids to bed, open the laptop, and like in my bed, watch my class, right? And then some places are really strict about supplies, like, you know, in a drawing class. My one professor would make us take photos of how we had sharpened our charcoal pencils to like make sure that it had a really long point. And they were so specific about that. And then you had to like have your name and your ID number in the photo as well, so that they could tell that like you were the one doing the work, right? Basically, you watch your tutorials, read your lectures, you know, maybe there's a book that goes along with things, and then you're tasked with drawing something, and then you photograph it and you post it to your discussion thread. And then, you know, this dreaded crit takes place where you give each other feedback and then critiques. And it's interesting because now I'd like to be on social media. It matters so much how you present your work. And those are the photos and the videos that get eyes on them, is things that are photographed in good lighting. And so like you learn those skills in this online class. They're truly applicable to your real life as an artist, you know, just if you want to display your work or share your work. But also those feedback things, like in the discussion threads, I mean, I feel like I learned a lot about how to look at my own work just from hearing about how other people would comment on it, or comment on their own or reflect on their own. Like that whole process is really important. And I think that's kind of like why most people go to take a class versus just trying to learn on their own, is they want that feedback.
Yeah, I remember all the way back to when I was at NYU like 10 years ago. I remember those group critique discussions, and I was like, at first I didn't understand the like how important it was. I was kind of like, we're doing this for the entire class? Yeah. Like, I don't get it. And now it makes sense to me because, like you said, critiquing other people's work also helps you critique your own work and understand what you should be doing differently. So it is very much all part of the process. And you mentioned social media a little bit. So I wanted to get to that eventually. This is a nice little transition. So I've been on social media on Instagram for a long time. I'm a little jealous of how much you have skyrocketed on social media. You have like, what, 35,000 followers or something like that?
I mean, like the followers, how much do you think about it or not think about it? I think about it too much, probably.
I mean, same here. What would you say, what was the kind of content, I guess, that you were making when it started to take off? Because yes, followers are followers, but it shows that people are relating to you and your work.
Thank you. Yeah, I think about this like a ton, right? Who do I follow and why? And what am I getting from following someone? And so for me, I was like, okay, the people that I like to follow either inspire me or I'm going to learn something from them. So they either make me want to get up and paint something, or I know that I'm going to pick up like a technique or a tip on an art supply or whatever. And so for me, like the sweet spot is really the teaching element. I can show you a trick that I learned. Like I had this aha moment and I'm going to show you what it is, and like pinpointing those little things, like those kind of like drawing or painting pitfalls, if you will. I think people like that. And I know like a lot of artists have forgotten what they already know because it's so like ingrained in them. It's natural for them. And for me, learning later, it's not. I'm having those kind of discoveries all the time. But yeah, I think people really want to know what you know as an artist who can make things. Because I think it's really frustrating as someone who's trying to learn to hear like, oh gosh, I posted this on Threads once and they like came for me. They're like, don't you dare say that. I hate like when I hear people say like, how do you draw so well? How do you draw this? How do you do that? And people go, practice, practice. And I'm like, oh, stop it. Stop saying practice. We know practice. We're doing the practice. But what are the little things that make it so that you aren't just practicing and making your same mistakes over and over and over again? I have this video about drawing cups. And like if your top ellipse is narrow or wide, the bottom ellipse needs to be more round. I don't know why people aren't saying this over and over again. I had only heard it once. It clicked for me in such a way where I was like, finally, I understand why all my cups look squashed and wonky and bad. I think those are the kinds of things that people really want to know. And I don't think like most artists are like, I'm going to keep that knowledge to myself and never share it. I think they've just like internalized it and moved on.
It's really kind of lovely about artists is that in theory, we are all competing with each other. We are all selling the same product, art, but it's so different that we kind of get to have this culture of sharing and being there for each other and supporting versus like competing and like, okay, how do I get a leg up on this person? So I think that's wonderful.
I think that you just like hit upon one of the best reasons to, if someone's like thinking about, should I take an art class? I think that might be the reason is that you really start to unlearn that kind of mindset of I'm competing with these artists. Cause I mean, you'll see, we'll all draw the same figure and it looks so different for everyone. Mm-hmm. And most of that isn't even skill set. It's just the way that you look at something and what comes out of your body is going to be different from person to person. And so like that fear of competition or like being around other people who want the same things that you want, I think it starts to fade away the more that you are in that because you realize like we can all literally go into the world and make and sell our art. and I'll be successful, all of us. And they're like, there is no scarcity for that, you know?
It's kind of crazy that, I mean, these are things that are founded upon like thousands of years. We're doing the same things.
Yeah.
My figure drawing professor slash kind of our figure drawing professor pointed out that when you're using a charcoal stick, that's basically what cavemen used when they drew on mm-hmm. cave walls. Mm-hmm. So we're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Emily, how do we know each other? Tell us about that.
We get to go to school together.
Isn't yeah. it cool?
And I get to be a TA in this class.
I kind of had a similar journey, if you will. I was, you know, straight out of high school, went into college, and then I ended up pausing halfway through in order to start Super Fair, our art fair that we have. And then that, you know, 10 years suddenly goes by. And so then last year I decided that I wanted to go back and complete my degree. So I'm also at SCAD right now. I'm living down in Mexico City, and I have, you know, a million and one things that I'm doing. So it's really nice to be able to have this full degree online. It even though it's a lot of work, it feels like it fits really naturally into my life, into my day. I think the other thing that is an advantage being a student at an older age, you really appreciate it. Like, you're there by choice.
Yeah, to really know why you're doing what you're doing. Yeah.
And you're drawing alongside us, so mm-hmm. you're kind of getting to be, you're continuing your own classes, and then also you're pursuing your MFA right now, correct?
Yep. There's really only so many professors that teach online. And so you don't have that same exposure to, you know, meeting people in real life and like forming a network where you might get a referral from a friend or whatever. It's just a little different. But so yeah, I like trolled ratemyprofessors.com to find our professor. And I mean, like, have you ever seen a 5-star professor?
No. Usually it's like maximum 4.5 or something. But yeah, no, he had a really good rating.
Yeah. And I was like, what? I got to see what's going on here. But I did also, I moved towards figure drawing because I was like, gosh, this is just not my thing. I don't do mm-hmm. it a lot. I love it. I fear it. It's like the thing I avoid, and I'll get better at it someday. And so I'm like, might as well just do that. Get more practice while I'm doing this TA thing. And yeah, so it's like a funny place to be, but also, like, I think we have so much fun in that class. Maybe the most fun class I've had.
It is. We have too much fun in that class. It's And I think that that's very reassuring with specifically with figure drawing, because in a way, sort of what you were talking about with just art in general, where it feels like this impossible thing, like, oh, that's for other people, that's not for me, I don't know how to do that, I can't. And then you realize that it's individual steps and concepts that you learn and you train yourself to understand a little faster and a little faster, and then suddenly you're like, wow, that looks like a person, huh? I didn't think I could do that.
This isn't as scary as I might have thought.
Yeah mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think that you and I are both proponents of online education. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, because I think that there's this impression of this,
like, it lacks legitimacy or in some way. And yeah.
Totally.
It is not some joke, you know, degree, or like, it's intense in a good way. It's mm-hmm. legit. It's I think of it as this is going to change things. I always like frame things in terms of mothers, but I think it's going to really change things in terms of like how many people who have small children at home now have access to education. And that's really exciting for me because I felt for so long like that lack of freedom to pursue my interests, you know, because I just had little kids at home and it seemed impossible to go get that next degree or even just learn anything new. And it's like, it's so possible. We're lucky to live in this time where we have access to that.
To have a little full circle moment. So mm-hmm. at the beginning, you mentioned your pretend gallery shows when you were a kid. But what's the next step of your art that you're really excited for?
Gosh, there's a lot. My thesis is going to be a how-to watercolor book. So I'll be shopping that around with agencies and publishers, you know, next summer. And because, yeah, I see that as being like a good piece to my work of sharing in a different way, in a different space, all the things that I've learned along the way. I want to create like a paper goods business too and have that be like the work, you know, you can buy it in greeting cards or to-do lists or whatever. Yeah, I mean, that's too many things, right?
You are an artist at heart and an entrepreneur at heart. I can tell.
Really, I really am like, well, this will be one leg of the business and I'll, you know, but I think that's really just how my brain works. And those are the things that feel exciting to me, those entrepreneurial projects. I think you might be a little bit like that too, James.
I mean, I try. Thank you so much for being here on the Artist Business Plan. This has been such a wonderful chat having you.
Thank you for having me. Such a pleasure.
Absolutely. And I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, I get to give my first lecture on how to draw faces.
On faces, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness.
You're right.
Terrified.
I feel like faces end up being fun.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
You got it.
The Artist Business Plan podcast is presented by The Super Fair, the widest ranging art fair in the United States. For more information on applying to The Super Fair, visit our website at thesuperfair.com. There you'll also find our full back catalog of episodes, as well as other resources to help you build your business plan. If you like what you heard, send us a message on Instagram. You can follow us at The Super Fair. Thanks for listening.